was working as many shifts as she could. At night, she'd noticed that Joe's lights were on, but it was too late for her to drop by, and Joe hadn't been there the previous weekend.
"Long time no talk,"
Joe said with a wave. She tapped the wind chime, making it ding before crossing the yard. Katie reached the porch and put the bags down.
"Where have you been?"
Joe shrugged.
"You know how it goes. Late nights, early mornings, going here and there. Half the time I feel like I'm being pulled in every direction."
She motioned to the rockers.
"You mind?
I need a break. I've been cleaning all morning and I just hung that thing. I like the sound, you know."
"Go ahead," Katie said. Joe sat and rolled her shoulders, working out the kinks.
"You've been getting some sun," she commented.
"Did you go to the beach?"
"No," Katie said. She scooted one of the bags aside to make room for her foot. "I picked up some extra day shifts the past couple of weeks, and I worked outside on the deck."
"Sun, water, what else is there? Working at Ivan's must be like being on vacation."
Katie laughed. "Not quite. But how about you?"
"No sun, no fun for me these days."
She nodded toward the bags.
"I wanted to drop by and mooch a cup of coffee this morning, but you were already gone."
"I went shopping."
"I can tell. Did you find anything you liked?"
"I think so," Katie confessed.
"Well, don't just sit there. Show me what you bought."
"Are you sure?" Joe laughed.
"I live in a cottage at the end of a gravel road in the middle of nowhere, and I've been washing cabinets all morning. What else do I have to excite me?"
Katie pulled out a pair of jeans and handed them over. Joe held them up, turning them from front to back.
"Wow," Joe said. "You must have found these at Anna Jean's. I love that place."
"How did you know I went to Anna Jean's?"
"Because it's not like any of the stores around here sell things this nice. This came from someone's closet, a rich woman's closet. A lot of the stuff is practically new."
Lowering the jeans, Joe ran her finger over the stitching on the pockets.
"These are great. I love the designs."
She peeked toward the bag.
"What else did you get?"
Katie handed over the items, one by one, listening as Joe raved about every piece. When the bag was empty, Joe sighed.
"Okay, it's official. I'm jealous. And let me guess, there's nothing like any of this left in the store, is there?"
Katie shrugged, feeling suddenly sheepish. "Sorry," she said. "I was there for a while."
"Well, good for you. These are treasures."
Katie nodded toward Joe's house. "How's it coming over there?" she asked. "Have you started painting?"
"Not yet."
"Too busy at work?" Joe made a face.
"The truth is, after I got the unpacking done and I cleaned the place from top to bottom, I sort of ran out of energy. It's a good thing you're my friend, since that means I can still come over here, where it's bright and cheery."
"You're welcome anytime."
"Thanks. I appreciate that. But evil Mr. Benson is going to deliver some cans of paint tomorrow, which also explains why I'm here. I'm dreading the very idea of spending my entire weekend covered in splatter."
"It's not so bad. It goes fast."
"Do you see these hands?"
Joe said, holding them up.
"These were made for caressing handsome men and meant to be adorned with pretty nails and diamond rings. They're not made for paint rollers and paint splatter and that kind of manual labor."
Katie giggled. "Do you want me to come over and help?"
"Absolutely not. I'm an expert in procrastination, but the last thing I want you to think is that I'm incompetent, too. Because I'm actually pretty good at what I do."
A flock of starlings broke from the trees, moving in an almost musical rhythm. The motion of the rockers was making the porch creak slightly.
"What do you do?" Katie asked.
"I'm a counselor of sorts."
"For the high school?"
"No," she said, shaking her head. "I'm a grief counselor.
Oh, Katie said. She paused. I'm not sure what that is.
Joe shrugged.
I visit with people and try to help them. Usually it's because someone close to them has died.
She paused, and when she went on, her voice was softer.
People react in a lot of different ways, and it's up to me to figure out how to help them accept what happened.
And I hate that word, by the way, since I've yet to meet anyone who wants to accept it. But that's pretty much what I'm supposed to do.
Because in the end, no matter how hard it is, acceptance helps people move on with the rest of their lives. But sometimes...
She trailed off. In the silence, she scratched at a piece of flaking paint on the rocker.
Sometimes, when I'm with someone, other issues come up. That's what I've been dealing with lately. Because sometimes people need help in other ways, too.
That sounds rewarding.
It is, even if it has challenges.
She turned toward Katie.
But what about you?
You know, I work at Ivan's.
But you haven't told me anything else about yourself.
There's not much to tell, Katie protested, hoping to deflect the line of questioning.
Of course there is. Everyone has a story.
She paused.
For instance, what really brought you to Southport?
I already told you, Katie said. I wanted to start over. Joe seemed to stare right through her as she studied the answer.
Okay,
she finally said, her tone light.
You're right. It's not my business.
That's not what I said.
Yes, you did. You just said it in a nice way. And I respect your answer because you're right. It isn't my business. But just so you know, when you say you wanted to start over, the counselor in me wonders why you felt the need to start over. And more importantly, what you left behind.
Katie felt her shoulders tense. Sensing her discomfort, Joe went on.
How about this? She asked, gently. Forget I even asked the question. Just know that if you ever want to talk, I'm here, okay? I'm good at listening, especially with friends. And believe it or not, sometimes talking helps.
What if I can't talk about it? Katie said in an involuntary whisper.
Then how about this? Ignore the fact that I'm a counselor. We're just friends, and friends can talk about anything, like where you were born or something that made you happy as a kid.
Why is that important?
It isn't, and that's the point. You don't have to say anything at all that you don't want to say.
Katie absorbed her words before squinting at Joe. You're very good at your job, aren't you?
I try,
Joe conceded. Katie laced her fingers together in her lap. All right. I was born in Altoona, she said. Joe leaned back in her rocking chair.
I've never been there. Is it nice?
It's one of those old railroad towns, she said. You know the kind. A town filled with good, hard-working people who are just trying to make a better life for themselves. And it was pretty, too, especially in the fall, when the leaves began to change. I used to think there was no place more beautiful in the world. She lowered her eyes, half lost in memories. I used to have a friend named Emily, and together we'd lay pennies on the railroad tracks. After the train went past, we'd scramble around, trying to find them. And when we did, we'd always marvel at how any trace of engraving would be completely gone. Sometimes the pennies were still hot. I remember almost burning my fingers one time. When I think back on my childhood, it's mostly about small pleasures like that. Katie shrugged, but Joe remained silent, willing her to go on. Anyway, that's where I went to school, all the way through. I ended up graduating from high school there, but by then, I don't know. I guess I was tired of all of it, you know? Small town life, where every weekend was the same people going to the same parties, the same boys drinking beer in the beds of their pickup trucks. I wanted something more,
But college didn't work out, and long story short, I ended up in Atlantic City. I worked there for a while, moved around a bit, and now, years later, here I am. In another small town where everything stays the same. Katie shook her head. It's different here. It makes me feel... When she hesitated, Joe finished the thought for her. Safe? When Katie's startled gaze met hers, Joe seemed bemused. It's not that hard to figure out. Like you said, you're starting over. And what better place to start over than a place like this, where nothing ever happens? She paused. Well, that's not quite true. I heard there was a little excitement a couple of weeks back. When you dropped by the store?
You heard about that?
It's a small town. It's impossible not to hear about it. What happened?
It was scary. One minute I was talking to Alex, and when I saw what was happening on the monitor, I guess he noticed my expression because in the next instant he was racing past me. He moved through that store like lightning. And then Kristen saw the monitor and started to panic. I scooped her up and followed her dad. By the time I got out there, Alex was already out of the water with Josh. I'm just glad he was okay.
Me too, Joe nodded.
What do you think of Kristen? Isn't she just the sweetest thing?
She calls me Miss Katie.
I love that little girl,
Joe said, drawing her knees up to her chest.
But it doesn't surprise me that the two of you get along, or that she reached for you when she was scared.
Why would you say that?
Because she's a perceptive little thing. She knows you've got a good heart.
Katie made a skeptical face. Maybe she was just scared about her brother, and when her dad took off, I was the only one there.
Don't sell yourself short. Like I said, she's perceptive, Joe pressed on. How was Alex? Afterward, I mean.
He was still shaken up, but other than that, he seemed all right.
Have you talked to him much since then?
Katie gave a noncommittal shrug. Not too much. He's always nice when I come into the store, and he stocks what I need, but that's about it.
He's good about things like that, Joe said, with assurance.
You sound like you know him pretty well.
Joe rocked a little in her chair. I think I do.
Katie waited for more, but Joe was silent. You want to talk about it? Katie inquired innocently. Because talking sometimes helps, especially with a friend. Joe's eyes sparkled.
You know, I always suspected you were a lot craftier than you let on. Throwing my own words back at me, you should be ashamed.
Katie smiled, but said nothing, just as Joe had done with her. And surprising her, it worked.
I'm not sure how much I should say, Joe added. But I can tell you this. He's a good man. He's the kind of man you can count on to do the right thing. You can see that in how much he loves his kids.
Katie brought her lips together for a moment. Did you two ever see each other? Joe seemed to choose her words carefully.
Yes, but maybe not in the way you're thinking. And just so we're clear, it was a long time ago and everyone has moved on.
Katie wasn't sure what to make of her answer, but didn't want to press it. What's his story, by the way? I take it he's divorced, right?
You should ask him.
Me?
Why would I want to ask him? Because you asked me, Joe said, arching an eyebrow. Which means, of course, that you are interested in him.
I'm not interested in him.
Then why would you be wondering about him?
Katie scowled. For a friend, you're kind of manipulative. Joe shrugged.
I just tell people what they already know, but are afraid to admit to themselves.
Katie thought about that. Just so we're clear, I'm officially taking back my offer to help you paint your house.
You already said you'd do it.
I know, but I'm taking back the offer. Joe laughed.
Okay, she said. Hey, what are you doing tonight?
I have to go to work in a little while. Actually, I should probably start getting ready. How about tomorrow night? Are you working?
No, I have the weekend off.
Then how about I bring over a bottle of wine? I'm sure I'm going to need it, and I really don't want to be inhaling the paint fumes any longer than I have to. Would that be okay?
Actually, that sounds like fun.
Good.
Jo unfolded herself from the chair and stood.
It's a date.
Chapter 5. Saturday morning dawned with blue skies, but soon clouds began rolling in. Gray and thick, they swirled and twisted in the ever-rising wind. The temperature began to plummet, and by the time Katie left the house, she had to wear a sweatshirt. The store was a little shy of 2 miles from her house, maybe half an hour's walk at a steady pace, and she knew she'd have to hurry if she didn't want to get caught in a storm. She reached the main road just as she heard the thunder rumbling. She picked up the pace, feeling the air thickening around her. A truck sped past, leaving a blast of dust in its wake, and Katie moved onto the sandy median. The air smelled of salt, carried from the ocean. Above her, a red-tailed hawk floated intermittently on updrafts, testing the force of the wind. The steady rhythm of her footfalls set her mind adrift, and she found herself reflecting on her conversation with Jo. Not the stories she'd told, but some of the things Jo had said about Alex. Jo, she decided, didn't know what she was talking about. While she was simply trying to make conversation, Jo had twisted her words into something that wasn't quite true. Granted, Alex seemed like a nice guy, and as Jo said, Kristen was as sweet as could be, but she wasn't interested in him. She barely knew him. Since Josh had fallen in the river, they hadn't said more than a few words to each other, and the last thing she wanted was a relationship of any kind. So why had it felt like Jo was trying to bring them together? She wasn't sure, but honestly, it didn't matter. She was glad Jo was coming over tonight. Just a couple of friends, sharing some wine. It wasn't that special, she knew. Other people, other women, did things like that all the time. She wrinkled her brow. All right, maybe not all the time, but most of them probably felt like they could do it if they wanted to, and she supposed that was the difference between her and them. How long had it been since she'd done something that felt normal? Since her childhood, she admitted. Since those days when she'd put pennies on the track. But she hadn't been completely truthful with Jo. She hadn't told her that she often went to the railroad tracks to escape the sound of her parents arguing, their slurred voices raging at each other. She didn't tell Jo that more than once she'd been caught in the crossfire, and that when she was 12, she'd been hit with a snow globe that her father had thrown at her mother. It made a gash in her head that bled for hours, but neither her mom nor her dad had shown any inclination to bring her to the hospital. She didn't tell Jo that her dad was mean when he was drunk, or that she'd never invited anyone, even Emily, over to her house, or that college hadn't worked out because her parents thought it was a waste of time and money, or that they'd kicked her out of the house on the day she graduated from high school. Maybe, she thought, she'd tell Jo about those things. Or maybe she wouldn't. It wasn't all that important. So what if she hadn't had the best childhood? Yes, her parents were alcoholics and often unemployed, but aside from the snow globe incident, they'd never hurt her. No, she didn't get a car or have birthday parties, but she'd never gone to bed hungry either. And in the fall, no matter how tight things were, she always got new clothes for school. Her dad might not have been the greatest, but he hadn't snuck into her bedroom at night to do awful things, things she knew had happened to her friends. At 18, she didn't consider herself scarred, a bit disappointed about college, maybe, and nervous about having to make her own way in the world, but not damaged beyond repair. And she'd made it. Atlantic City hadn't been all bad. She'd met a couple of nice guys, and she could remember more than one evening she spent laughing and talking with friends from work until the early hours of the morning. No, she reminded herself. Her childhood hadn't defined her, or had anything to do with the real reason she'd come to Southport. Even though Joe was the closest thing to a friend that she had in Southport, Joe knew absolutely nothing about her. No one did.
Hi, Miss Katie.
Kristen piped up from her little table. No dolls today. Instead, she was bent over a coloring book, holding crayons and working on a picture of unicorns and rainbows. Hi, Kristen. How are you?
I'm good.
She looked up from her coloring book.
Why do you always walk here?
Katie paused, then came around the corner of the counter and squatted down to Kristen's level. Because I don't have a car.
Why not?
Because I don't have a license, Katie thought. And even if I did, I can't afford a car. I'll tell you what. I'll think about getting one, okay?
Okay,
she said. She held up the coloring book.
What do you think of my picture?
It's pretty. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, she said. I'll give it to you when I'm finished.
You don't have to do that.
I know,
she said with charming self-assurance.
But I want to. You can hang it on your refrigerator.
Katie smiled and stood up. That's just what I was thinking.
Do you need help shopping?
I think I can handle it today. And that way you can finish coloring.
Okay,
she agreed. Retrieving a basket, she saw Alex approaching. He waved at her, and though it made no sense, she had the feeling that she was really seeing him for the first time. Though his hair was gray, there were only a few lines around the corners of his eyes, but they added to, rather than detracted, from an overall sense of vitality. His shoulders tapered to a trim waist, and she had the impression that he was a man who neither ate nor drank to excess.
Hey, Katie, how are you?
I'm fine. And yourself?
Can't complain, he grinned. I'm glad you came in. I wanted to show you something.
He pointed toward the monitor, and she saw Josh sitting on the dock, holding his fishing pole. You let him go back out there? She asked.
See the vest he's wearing?
She leaned closer, squinting. A life jacket?
It took me a while to find one that wasn't too bulky or too hot, but this one is perfect. And really, I had no choice. You have no idea how miserable he was, not being able to fish. I can't tell you how many times he begged me to change my mind. I couldn't take it anymore. And I thought this was a solution.
He's okay with wearing it?
New rule. It's either wear it or don't fish. But I don't think he minds.
Does he ever catch any fish?
Not as many as he'd like, but yes, he does.
Do you eat them?
Sometimes,
he nodded.
But Josh usually throws them back. He doesn't mind catching the same fish over and over.
I'm glad you found a solution.
A better father probably would have figured it out beforehand.
For the first time, she looked up at him. I get the sense you're a pretty good father. Their eyes held for a moment before she forced herself to turn away. Alex, sensing her discomfort, began rummaging around behind the counter.
I have something for you, he said,
pulling out a bag and placing it on the counter.
There's a small farm I work with that has a hothouse, and they grow things when other people can't. They just dropped off some fresh vegetables yesterday. Tomatoes, cucumbers, some different kinds of squash. You might want to try them out. My wife swore they're the best she'd ever tasted.
Your wife? He shook his head.
I'm sorry. I still do that sometimes. I met my late wife. She passed away a couple of years ago.
I'm sorry, she murmured, her mind flashing back to her conversation with Joe. What's his story?
You should ask him.
Joe had countered. Joe obviously had known that his wife had died, but hadn't said anything. Odd. Alex didn't notice that her mind had wandered.
Thank you, he said, his voice subdued. She was a great person. You would have liked her.
A wistful expression crossed his face.
But anyway, he finally added, she swore by the place. It's organic, and the family still harvests by hand. Usually the produce is gone within hours, but I set a little aside for you, in case you wanted to try some.
He smiled.
Besides, you're a vegetarian, right? A vegetarian will appreciate these. I promise.
She squinted up at him. Why would you think I'm a vegetarian?
You're not?
No.
Oh,
he said, pushing his hands into his pockets.
My mistake.
It's okay, she said. I've been accused of worse.
I doubt that.
Don't, she thought to herself. Okay, she nodded. I'll take the vegetables. And thank you. Chapter 6. As Katie shopped, Alex fiddled around the register, watching her from the corner of his eye. He straightened the counter, checked on Josh, examined Kristen's picture, and straightened the counter again, doing his best to seem busy. She'd changed in recent weeks. She had the beginnings of a summer tan, and her skin had a glowing freshness to it. She was also growing less skittish around him, today being a prime example. No, they hadn't set the world on fire with their scintillating conversation, but it was a start, right? But the start of what? From the very beginning, he'd sensed she was in trouble, and his instinctive response had been to want to help. And of course she was pretty, despite the bad haircut and plain Jane attire. But it was seeing the way Katie had comforted Kristen after Josh had fallen in the water that had really moved him. Even more affecting had been Kristen's response to Katie. She had reached for Katie like a child reaching for her mother. It had made his throat tighten, reminding him that as much as he missed having a wife, his children missed having a mother. He knew they were grieving, and he tried to make up for it as best he could. But it wasn't until he saw Katie and Kristen together that he realized that sadness was only part of what they were experiencing. Their loneliness mirrored his own. It troubled him that he hadn't realized it before. As for Katie, she was something of a mystery to him. There was a missing element somewhere, something that had been gnawing at him. He watched her, wondering who she really was and what had brought her to Southport. She was standing near one of the refrigerator cases, something she'd never done before, studying the items behind the glass. She frowned, and as she was debating what to buy, he noticed the fingers of her right hand twisting around her left ring finger, toying with a ring that wasn't there. The gesture triggered something both familiar and long forgotten. It was a habit, a tic he'd noticed during his years at CID, and sometimes observed with women whose faces were bruised and disfigured. They used to sit across from him, compulsively touching their rings, as though they were shackles that bound them to their husbands. Usually they denied that their husband had hit them, and in the rare instances they admitted the truth, they usually insisted it wasn't his fault, that they'd provoked him. They'd tell him that they'd burned dinner, or hadn't done the wash, or that he'd been drinking. And always, always, these same women would swear that it was the first time it had ever happened, and tell him that they didn't want to press charges because his career would be ruined. Everyone knew the army came down hard on abusive husbands. Some were different, though, at least in the beginning, and insisted that they wanted to press charges. He would start the report and listen as they questioned why paperwork was more important than making an arrest, than enforcing the law. He would write up the report anyway and read their own words back to them before asking them to sign it. It was then, sometimes, that their bravado would fail, and he'd catch a glimpse of the terrified woman beneath the angry surface. Many would end up not signing it, and even those who did would quickly change their minds when their husbands were brought in. Those cases went forward, no matter what the woman decided. But later, when a wife wouldn't testify, little punishment was meted out. Alex came to understand that only those who pressed charges ever became truly free, because the life they were leading was a prison, even if most of them wouldn't admit it. Still, there was another way to escape the horror of their lives. though in all his years he'd only come across one who actually did it. He'd interviewed the woman once, and she'd taken the usual route of denial and self-blame. But a couple of months later, he'd learned that she'd fled, not to her family and not to her friends, but somewhere else, a place where even her husband couldn't find her. Her husband, lost in his fury that his wife had left, had exploded after a long night of drinking and had bloodied an MP. He ended up in Leavenworth, and Alex remembered grinning in satisfaction when he'd heard the news. And when thinking of the man's wife, he smiled, thinking, "Good for you." Now, as he watched Katie toying with a ring that wasn't there, he felt his old investigative instincts kick in. There'd been a husband, he thought. Her husband was the missing element. Either she was still married or she wasn't, but he had an undeniable hunch that Katie was still afraid of him. The sky exploded while she was reaching for a box of crackers. Lightning flashed, and a few seconds later, thunder crackled before finally settling into a loud, angry rumble. Josh dashed inside right before the downpour started, clutching his tackle box and fishing reel as he entered the store. His face was red and he was panting like a runner crossing the finish line.
"Hey, Dad."
Alex looked up. "Catch anything?"
"Just the catfish again. The same one I catch every time."
"I'll see you in a little bit for lunch, okay?" Josh vanished back into the storeroom and Alex heard him padding up the steps to the house. Outside, the rain came down hard, and the wind whipped sheets of water against the glass. Branches bent in the wind, bowing to a higher power. The dark sky flashed bright with lightning, and thunder boomed, loud enough to shake the windows. From across the store, Alex saw Katie flinch, her face a mask of surprise and terror, and he found himself wondering whether it was the same way her husband had once seen her. The door of the store opened, and a man rushed in, trailing water on the old wood flooring. He shook rivulets of rain from his sleeves and nodded at Alex before finally moving toward the grill. Katie turned back to the shelf that held crackers. He didn't have a big selection, just saltines and Ritz, the only two that sold regularly, and she reached for the Ritz. She selected her usual items as well and carried her basket to the register. When he finished ringing up and bagging her items, Alex tapped the bag he'd put on the counter earlier. "Don't forget the vegetables." She glanced at the total on the register. "Are you sure you rang them up?"
"Of course."
"Because the total isn't any more than it usually is."
"I gave you the introductory price."
She frowned, wondering whether to believe him, then finally reached into the bag. She pulled out a tomato and brought it to her nose. "It smells good."
"I had some last night. They're great with a touch of salt, and the cucumbers don't need anything."
She nodded, but her gaze was focused on the door. The wind was driving rain against it in furious waves. The door creaked open, the water fighting to get inside. The world beyond the glass was blurry. People lingered in the grill. Alex could hear them mumbling to themselves about waiting for the storm to break. Katie drew a fortifying breath and reached for her bags.
"Miss Katie!"
Kristen cried, sounding almost panicked. She stood, brandishing the picture she'd colored. She'd already torn it from the book.
"You almost forgot your picture!"
Katie reached for it, brightening as she examined the picture. Alex noted how, at least for an instant, everything else in the world seemed to be forgotten.
"This is beautiful," she murmured. "I can't wait to hang it up."
"I'll color another one for you the next time you come in."
"I'd like that very much," she said. Kristen beamed before sitting at the table again. Katie rolled up the picture, making sure not to wrinkle it, and then tucked it into the bag. Lightning and thunder erupted almost simultaneously this time. Rain hammered the ground, and the parking lot was a sea of puddles. The sky was as dark as northern seas.
"Do you know how long the storm is supposed to last?" she asked.
I heard it was supposed to last most of the day, Alex answered.
She stared out the door. As she debated what to do, she toyed again with the non-existent ring. In the silence, Kristen tugged at her dad's shirt.
You should drive Miss Katie home, she told him. She doesn't have a car, and it's raining hard.
Alex looked at Katie, knowing she'd overheard Kristen.
Would you like a ride home?
Katie shook her head. No, that's okay.
But what about the picture?
Kristen said.
It might get wet.
When Katie didn't answer immediately, Alex came out from behind the register.
Come on, he motioned with his head. There's no reason to get soaked. My car's right out back.
I don't want to impose.
You're not imposing.
He patted his pocket and pulled out his car keys before reaching for the bags.
Let me get those for you, he said, taking them. Kristen, sweetie, will you run upstairs and tell Josh I'll be back in 10 minutes?
Sure, Daddy,
she said.
Roger,
he called out.
Watch the store and the kids for a bit, would you? No problem.
Roger waved. Alex nodded toward the rear of the store.
You ready?
He asked. They made a frantic dash for the Jeep, wielding bent umbrellas against the gale-force winds and blankets of rain. Lightning continued to flash, making the clouds blink. Once they had settled into their seats, Katie used her hand to wipe the condensation from the window. I didn't think it would be like this when I left the house.
No one ever does, until the storm hits anyway. We get a lot of the sky is falling on the weather reports, so when something big does hit, people never expect it. If it's not as bad as the reports predicted, we complain. If it's worse than expected, we complain. If it's just as bad as predicted, we complain about that too, because we'll say the reports are wrong so often, there was no way to know they'd be right this time. It just gives people something to complain about.
Like the people in the grill? He nodded and grinned.
But they're basically good people. For the most part, they're hardworking, honest, and as kind as the day is long. Any one of them would have been glad to watch the store for me if I'd asked. And they'd account for every penny. It's like that down here. Because deep down, everyone here knows that in a small town like this, we all need one another. It's great, even if it did take some time for me to get used to it.
You're not from here?
No, my wife was. I'm from Spokane. When I first moved here, I remember thinking that there wasn't a chance I'd ever stay in a place like this. I mean, it's a small southern town that doesn't care what the rest of the world thinks. It takes a little getting used to at first. But then, it grows on you. It keeps me focused on what's important.
Katie's voice was soft. What's important? He shrugged.
Depends on the person, doesn't it? But right now, for me, it's about my kids. This is home for them. And after what they've been through, they need predictability. Kristen needs a place to color and dress her dolls, and Josh needs a place to fish. And they both need to know that I'm around whenever they need me. This place and the store gives them that. And right now, that's what I want. It's what I need.
He paused, feeling self-conscious about talking so much.
By the way, where am I going, exactly?
Keep going straight. There's a gravel road that you'll have to turn on. It's a little past the curve.
You mean the gravel road by the plantation?
Katie nodded. That's the one.
I didn't even know that road went anywhere.
He wrinkled his forehead.
That's quite a walk, he said. What is it, a couple of miles?
It's not too bad, she demurred.
Maybe in nice weather, but today you'd have to swim home. There's no way you could have walked this far. And Kristen's picture would have been ruined.
He noted the flicker of a smile at Kristen's name, but she said nothing.
Someone said you work at Ivan's?
He prompted. She nodded. I started in March.
How do you like it?
It's okay. It's just a job, but the owner has been good to me.
Ivan?
You know him?
Everyone knows Ivan. Did you know he dresses up like a Confederate general every fall to reenact the famed Battle of Southport? when Sherman burned the town? Which is fine, of course. Except that there was never a Battle of Southport in the Civil War. Southport wasn't even called Southport back then. It was called Smithville. And Sherman was never within 100 miles of here.
Seriously? Katie asked.
Don't get me wrong. I like Ivan. He's a good man, and the restaurant is a fixture in this town. Kristen and Josh love the hush puppies there, and Ivan's always welcoming whenever we show up. But sometimes, I've wondered what drives him. His family arrived from Russia in the 50s. First generation, in other words. No one in his extended family has probably even heard of the Civil War. But Ivan will spend an entire weekend pointing his sword and shouting orders right in the middle of the road in front of the courthouse.
Why have I never heard about this?
Because it's not something the locals like to talk about. It's kind of eccentric, you know? Even locals, people who really like him, try to ignore him. They'll see Ivan in the middle of downtown and they'll turn away and start saying things like, "Can you believe how beautiful those chrysanthemums are by the courthouse?"
For the first time since she'd been in the car, Katie laughed. "I'm not sure I believe you."
"It doesn't matter. If you're here in October, you'll see for yourself. But again, don't get me wrong. He's a nice guy, and the restaurant is great. After a day at the beach, we almost always stop in there. Next time we come in, we'll ask for you."
She hesitated. "Okay."
"She likes you," Alex said. "Kristen, I mean."
"I like her. She's a bright spirit, a real personality."
"I'll tell her you said that. And thanks."
"How old is she?"
"She's 5. When she starts school in the fall, I don't know what I'm going to do. It'll be so quiet around the store."
"You'll miss her," Katie observed. He nodded.
"A lot. I know she'll enjoy school, but I kind of like having her around."
As he spoke, rain continued to sheet against the windows. The sky flashed on and off like a strobe, accompanied by an almost continuous rumble. Katie peered out the passenger side window, lost in her thoughts. He waited, somehow knowing she would break the silence. "How long were you and your wife married?" Katie finally asked.
5 years. We dated for a year before that. I met her when I was stationed at Fort Bragg.
"You were in the army?"
10 years. It was a good experience, and I'm glad I did it. At the same time, I'm glad I'm done.
Katie pointed through the windshield. "There's the turn, up ahead," she said. Alex turned onto Katie's road and slowed down. The rough gravel surface had flooded during the downpour, and water splashed up to the windows and over the windshield. As he focused on steering the car through the deep puddles, Alex was suddenly struck by the thought that this was the first time he'd been alone in a car with a woman since his wife had died.
"Which one is it?" he asked, squinting at the outline of 2 small cottages.
"The one on the right," she said. He turned into the makeshift drive and pulled as close to the house as he could.
"I'll bring the groceries to the door for you."
"You don't have to do that."
"You don't know the way I was raised," he said.
Jumping out before she could object, he grabbed the bags and ran them to her porch. By the time he set them down and began to shake off, Katie was hurrying toward him, the umbrella Alex had lent her clutched in her hands. "Thanks," she called out over the noise of the downpour. When she offered him the umbrella, he shook his head.
"Keep it for a while. Or forever, it doesn't matter. If you walk a lot around here, you're gonna need it."
"I can pay you," she began.
"Don't worry about it."
"But this is from the store."
"It's okay," he said, "really. But if you don't think you should, then just settle up the next time you're in the store, okay?"
"Alex, really?" He didn't let her finish.
"You're a good customer, and I like to help my customers."
It took a moment for her to answer. "Thank you," she finally said, her eyes, now dark green, fixed on his. "And thanks for driving me home." He tipped his head.
"Anytime."
What to do with the kids?
It was the endless, sometimes unanswerable question he faced on weekends. And as usual, he had absolutely no idea. With the storm in full fury and showing no signs of letting up, doing anything outside was out of the question. He supposed he could take them to a movie, but there was nothing playing that they'd both be interested in. He supposed he could simply let them entertain themselves for a while. He knew lots of parents operated that way. On the other hand, his kids were still young, too young to be left completely to their own devices. More important, they were already on their own a lot, improvising ways to keep themselves entertained simply because of his long hours at the store. He pondered the options as he made grilled cheese sandwiches, but he soon found his thoughts drifting to Katie. While she was obviously doing her best to maintain a low profile, he knew it was almost impossible in a town like this. She was too attractive to blend in, and when people caught on to the fact that she walked everywhere, it was inevitable that talk would start and questions would be asked about her past. He didn't want that to happen. Not for selfish reasons, but because she was entitled to the kind of life she'd come here to find, a normal life, a life of simple pleasures, the kind that most people took for granted, the ability to go where she wanted, when she wanted, and live in a home where she felt safe and secure. She also needed a way to get around. "Hey, kids," he said, putting their sandwiches on plates. "I have an idea. Let's do something for Miss Katie."
"Okay,"
Kristen agreed. Josh, always easygoing, simply nodded. Chapter 7. Wind-driven rain blew hard across dark North Carolina skies, sweeping rivers against the kitchen windows. Earlier that afternoon, while Katie did her laundry in the sink and after she had taped Kristen's picture to the refrigerator, the ceiling in the living room had begun to leak. She'd placed a pot beneath the drip and had already emptied it twice. In the morning, she planned to call Benson, but she doubted whether he'd get around to repairing the leak right away. If, of course, he ever got around to fixing it at all. In the kitchen, she sliced small cubes from a block of cheddar cheese, nibbling as she moved about. On a yellow plastic plate were crackers and slices of tomatoes and cucumbers, although she couldn't arrange them to look the way she wanted. Nothing looked quite the way she wanted. In her previous home, she'd had a pretty wooden serving board and a silver cheese knife with an engraving of a cardinal and a full set of wine glasses. She'd had a dining room table made of cherry and sheer curtains in the window. But here the table wobbled and the chairs didn't match, the windows were bare, and she and Joe would have to drink wine from coffee mugs. As horrible as her life had been, she'd loved assembling the pieces of her household. But as with everything she'd left behind, she now viewed them as enemies that had gone over to the other side. Through the window, she saw one of Joe's lights blink out. Katie made her way to the front door. Opening it, she watched as Joe splashed through puddles on the way to her house, umbrella in one hand and a bottle of wine in the other. Another couple of stomps, and she was on the porch, her yellow slicker dripping wet.
"Now I understand how Noah must have felt. Can you believe this storm? I've got puddles all over my kitchen."
Katie motioned over her shoulder. "Mileek is in the living room."
"Home sweet home, right?"
"Here," she said, handing over the wine.
"Just like I promised. And believe me, I'm going to need it."
"Rough day?"
"Like you couldn't imagine."
"Come on in."
"Let me leave my coat out here, or you're gonna have two puddles in your living room," she said, shimmying out of her slicker. "I got soaked in the few seconds I was out there."
Joe tossed her coat on the rocker, along with the umbrella, and followed Katie inside as she led the way to the kitchen. Katie immediately set the wine on the counter. As Joe wandered to the table, Katie pulled open the drawer by the refrigerator. From the back of the drawer, she pulled out a rusted Swiss Army knife and readied the opener.
"This is great. I'm starved. I haven't eaten all day."
"Help yourself. How did it go with the painting?"
Well, I got the living room done. But after that, it wasn't such a good day. What happened? I'll tell you about it later. I need wine first. How about you? What did you do?
Nothing much. Ran to the store, cleaned up, did my laundry. Joe took a seat at the table and reached for a cracker.
In other words, memoir material.
Katie laughed as she began to twist the corkscrew.
Oh, yeah, real exciting. Do you want me to get that? Joe asked.
I think I've got it.
Good, Joe smirked, because I'm the guest, and I expect to be pampered.
Katie propped the bottle between her legs, and the cork came out with a pop.
Seriously, though, thanks for having me over.
Joe sighed.
You have no idea how much I've been looking forward to this.
Really?
Don't do that.
Don't do what? Katie asked.
Act surprised that I wanted to come over, that I wanted to bond over a bottle of wine. That's what friends do.
She raised an eyebrow. Oh, and by the way, before you start wondering whether or not we're actually friends and how well we know each other, trust me when I say that yes, absolutely, I consider you a friend.
She let that sink in before going on. Now, how about some wine?
The storm finally broke in the early evening, and Katie opened the kitchen window. The temperature had dropped, and the air felt cool and clean. While pockets of mist rose from the ground, rolling clouds drifted past the moon, bringing light and shadow in equal measures. Leaves turned from silver to black and silver again as they shimmered in the evening breeze. Katie drifted dreamily on the wine, the evening breeze, and Joe's easy laughter. Katie found herself savoring every bite of the buttery crackers and sharp, rich cheese, remembering how hungry she once had been. There was a time when she'd been as thin as a heated strand of blown glass. Her thoughts were wandering. She remembered her parents, not the hard times, but the good ones, when the demons were sleeping, when her mom made eggs and bacon, the aroma filling the house, and she'd seen her father glide into the kitchen toward her mother. He would pull aside her hair and kiss the side of her neck, making her giggle. Once, she remembered, her dad had brought them to Gettysburg. He'd taken her hand as they walked around, and she could still recall the rare sensation of strength and gentleness in his grasp. He was tall and broad-shouldered, with dark brown hair, and there was a navy tattoo on his upper arm. He'd served on a destroyer for 4 years and had been to Japan, Korea, and Singapore, though he said little else about his experience. Her mom was petite, with blonde hair, and had once competed in a beauty pageant, finishing as the second runner-up. She loved flowers, and in the spring she would plant bulbs in ceramic flower pots she placed in the yard. Tulips and daffodils, peonies and violets would explode in colors so bright they almost made Katie's eyes ache. When they moved, the flower pots would be placed on the back seat and fastened with seat belts. Often when she cleaned, her mother would sing to herself, melodies from childhood, some of them in Polish, and Katie would listen secretly from another room, trying to make sense of the words. The wine Joe and Katie were drinking had hints of oak and apricots, and it tasted wonderful. Katie finished her cup and Joe poured her another. When a moth began to dance around the light above the sink, fluttering with purpose and confusion, both of them began to giggle. Katie cut more cheese and added more crackers to the plate. They talked about movies and books, and Joe shrieked with pleasure when Katie said her favorite movie was It's a Wonderful Life, claiming that it was her favorite movie too. When she was younger, she remembered asking her mom for a bell so that she could help angels get their wings. Katie finished her second glass of wine, feeling as light as a feather on a summer breeze. Joe asked few questions. Instead, they stuck to superficial topics, and Katie thought again that she was happy for Joe's company. When silver highlighted the world beyond the window,
Katie and Joe stepped out onto the front porch. Katie could feel herself swaying slightly, and she took hold of the railing. They sipped their wine as the clouds continued to break, and all at once, the sky was filled with stars. Katie pointed out the Big Dipper and Polaris, the only stars she could name, but Joe began naming dozens of others. Katie stared at the sky in wonder, amazed at how much Joe knew about the constellations, until she noticed the names Joe was reciting.
That one's called Elmer Fudd, and over there, right above that pine tree, you can make out Daffy Duck.
When Katie finally realized that Joe knew as little about the stars as she did, Joe started to giggle like a mischievous kid. Back in the kitchen, Katie poured the last of the wine and took a sip. It was warm in Katie's throat and made her feel dizzy. The moth continued to dance around the light, though if she tried to focus on it, there seemed to be two of them. She felt happy and safe and thought again how enjoyable the evening had been. She had a friend, a real friend, someone who laughed and made jokes about the stars, and she wasn't sure if she wanted to laugh or cry, because it had been so long since she'd experienced something so easy and natural.
Are you okay?
Joe asked. I'm fine, Katie answered. I was just thinking that I'm glad you came over. Joe peered at her.
I think you might be tipsy.
I think you might be right, Katie agreed.
Well, okay then. What do you want to do? Since you're obviously tipsy and ready for fun.
I don't know what you mean.
Do you want to do something special? Head into town? Find someplace exciting?
Katie shook her head. No.
You don't want to meet people?
I'm better off alone. Joe ran her finger around the rim of the mug before saying anything. Trust me on this. No one is better off alone. I am. Joe thought about Katie's answer before leaning closer.
So, you're telling me that, assuming you had food, shelter, and clothing, and anything else you needed to simply survive, you'd rather be stranded on a desert island in the middle of nowhere, all alone, forever, for the rest of your life? Be honest.
Katie blinked, trying to keep Joe in focus. Why would you think I wouldn't be honest? Because everybody lies. It's part of living in society.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's necessary. The last thing anyone wants is to live in a society where total honesty prevails. Can you imagine the conversations? You're short and fat, one person might say. And the other might answer, I know, but you smell bad. It just wouldn't work. So people lie by omission all the time. People will tell you most of the story. And I've learned that the part they neglect to tell you is often the most important part. People hide the truth because they're afraid.
With Joe's words, Katie felt a finger touch her heart. All at once, it seemed hard to breathe. Are you talking about me? She finally croaked out.
I don't know. Am I?
Katie felt herself pale slightly, but before she could respond, Joe smiled.
Actually, I was thinking about my day today. I told you it was hard, right? Well, what I just told you is part of the problem. It gets frustrating when people won't tell the truth. I mean, how am I supposed to help people if they hold things back? If I don't really know what's going on?
Katie could feel something twisting and tightening in her chest. Maybe they want to talk about it, but they know there's nothing you can do to help, she whispered. There's always something I can do. In the moonlight, shining through the kitchen window, Joe's skin glowed a luminous white, and Katie had the sense that she never went out in the sun. The wine made the room move, the walls buckle. Katie could feel tears beginning to form in her eyes, and it was all she could do to blink them back. Her mouth was dry.
Not always, Katie whispered.
She turned to face the window. Beyond the glass, the moon hung low over the trees. Katie swallowed, suddenly feeling as if she were observing herself from across the room. She could see herself sitting at the table with Joe, and when she began to speak, her voice didn't seem to be her own. I had a friend once. She was in a terrible marriage, and she couldn't talk to anyone. He used to hit her, and in the beginning she told him that if it ever happened again, she would leave him. He swore that it wouldn't, and she believed him. But it only got worse after that, like when his dinner was cold, or when she mentioned that she'd visited with one of the neighbors who was walking by with his dog. She just chatted with him, but that night her husband threw her into a mirror. Katie stared at the floor. Linoleum was peeling up in the corners, but she hadn't known how to fix it. She'd tried to glue it, but the glue hadn't worked, and the corners had curled again. He always apologized, and sometimes he would even cry because of the bruises he'd made on her arms or legs or her back. He would say that he hated what he'd done, but in the next breath tell her she'd deserved it, that if she'd been more careful it wouldn't have happened, that if she'd been paying attention or hadn't been so stupid he wouldn't have lost his temper. She tried to change. She worked hard at trying to be a better wife and to do the things the way he wanted, but it was never enough. Katie could feel the pressure of tears behind her eyes, and though she tried again to stop them, she felt them sliding down her cheek. Joe was motionless across the table, watching her without moving. And she loved him. In the beginning, he was so sweet to her. He made her feel safe. On the night they met, she'd been working, and after she finished her shift, two men were following her. When she went around the corner, one of them grabbed her and clamped his hand over her mouth, and even though she tried to get away, the men were so much stronger, and she didn't know what would have happened except that her future husband came around the corner and hit one of them hard on the back of the neck, and he fell to the ground. And then he grabbed the other one and threw him into the wall, and it was over. Just like that. He helped her up and walked her home, and the next day he took her out for coffee. He was kind, and he treated her like a princess, right up until she was on her honeymoon. Katie knew she shouldn't be telling Joe any of this, but she couldn't stop. My friend tried to get away, twice. One time, she came back on her own because she had nowhere else to go. And the second time she ran away, she thought she was finally free. But he hunted her down and dragged her back to the house. At home, he beat her and put a gun to her head and told her that if she ever ran away again, he'd kill her. He'd kill any man she cared for. And she believed him, because by then, she knew he was crazy. But she was trapped. He never gave her any money. He never allowed her to leave the house. He used to drive by the house when he was supposed to be working just to make sure she was there. He monitored the phone records and called all the time, and he wouldn't let her get a driver's license. One time, when she woke up in the middle of the night, she found him standing over the bed, just staring at her. He'd been drinking and holding the gun again, and she was too scared to say anything other than to ask him to come to bed. But that was when she knew that if she stayed, the husband would eventually kill her. Katie swiped at her eyes, her fingers slick with salty tears. She could barely breathe, but the words kept coming. She started to steal money from his wallet. Never more than a dollar or two, because otherwise he would notice. Normally, he locked his wallet up at night, but sometimes he would forget. It took so long to get enough money for her to escape, because that's what she had to do. Escape. She had to go someplace where he would never find her, because she knew he wouldn't stop searching for her. And she couldn't tell anyone anything, because her family was gone, and she knew the police wouldn't do anything. If he so much as suspected anything, he would kill her. So she stole and saved and found coins in the sofa cushions and in the washing machine. She hid the money in a plastic bag that she put beneath a flower pot
and every time he went outside, she was sure he would find it.
It took so long to get the money she needed because she had to have enough to get far away so that he'd never find her, so that she could start over again.
Katie wasn't aware of when it had happened, but she realized that Joe had taken her hand and she was no longer watching herself from across the room. She could taste salt on her lips and imagined that her soul was leaking out. She wanted desperately to sleep. In the silence, Joe continued to hold her gaze.
"Your friend has a lot of courage," she said quietly.
"No,"
Katie said.
"My friend is scared all the time."
"That's what courage is. If she weren't scared, she wouldn't need courage in the first place. I admire what she did."
Joe gave her hand a squeeze.
"I think I'd like your friend. I'm glad you told me about her."
Katie glanced away, feeling utterly drained. "I probably shouldn't have told you all that." Joe shrugged.
"I wouldn't worry too much. One thing you'll learn about me is that I'm good with secrets. Especially when it comes to people I don't know, right?"
Katie nodded.